Welcome into this, the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Sebastian Salazar. We're going to be joined in just a little bit by Sid Lowe to discuss all the granular details of the reported swap between Juventus and Barcelona. Pjanic going to Barcelona, Arthur going to Juventus. We'll also discuss the latest controversial call that went Real Madrid's way. But we start in the Premier League. For the first time in 30 years, Liverpool are the champions of England. As you look at the table, there you see it. They got 23 points with 7 matches left to play. This thanks in large part to Chelsea's 2-1 victory over City on Thursday. We'll discuss that a little bit later on. But the big story, Liverpool are champions for the first time since 1990 and on their way to setting some pretty impressive records. Of course, chasing that 100-point plateau. Also, 28 wins so far this season, 32 the record set a couple years ago by Manchester City. And of course, the celebration is on. You waited this long, you've earned the right to celebrate it. There we see the Liverpool players enjoying the Premier League title. So there we have it. Liverpool are champions for the first time in 30 years, and Stevie Nichol is stuck somewhere in a car between Connecticut and Philadelphia. You cannot make this stuff up. Instead, we call on Frank LaBeouf and Craig Burley. Craig, strange old way to win a title. Awkward almost, you might say, for Liverpool.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how you get it done. Man City were the Man City that we've seen most of the season, and that was Captain Calamity at the back, and that's been their Achilles heel, and that's why they're so far off Liverpool. And last year they won the title, I think by a point. It was neck and neck all the way. It was a great title race. But Liverpool have been dominant, and they've been the ones that have been so consistent. They've had the quality, they've had the performances, they've gave themselves that huge gap, that huge buffer, and it was inevitable that it was going to come sooner rather than later. There was always a chance Chelsea were going to take points off Manchester City the way they've been playing this season, particularly defensively, and it happened tonight.
Frank, it's anticlimactic, but it's proof of how good Liverpool were. They won this title with 7 matches left to be played still.
An absolutely fantastic performance from the Liverpool Football Club, and I think they deserved to win the title, and hat off to them. They played the way they had to play to beat Manchester City and be the new champion. It was nice for me to see the Liverpool fan getting exciting when Chelsea was scoring a goal tonight. That was very fun for me. But going back to that club, to that team, what they did last year with the Champions League, what they did this season with the Premier League, they know that they are the best team in England and they deserve to win it. So congratulations to them.
Liverpool champions then, thanks at least on the day to Chelsea's victory over Manchester City at Stamford Bridge. Craig, how do you rate the performance from a Chelsea team that desperately needed the points?
Well, first and foremost, let me just go back to your point about Stevie. His timing's not great as usual. He's in that boiling hot car, face like a tomato, driving to Philadelphia, probably getting lost, arguing about directions to somewhere that he's been 100 times, and he's going to get there and find out that Liverpool have done it today. So he will be celebrating tonight for sure. I'm not quite sure how the players and fans in Liverpool are going to do it with the pandemic and the lockdown rules and the social distancing. But I think I was just saying to Frank before we came on air to tape this segment, is that Chelsea have been exciting at times this year, and I think it's going to give big hope to their supporters for next year, particularly with the Ziyech signing to come in, particularly with the signing of Timo Werner. They're very good going forward. And okay, Man City aided and abetted their downfall. But Chelsea at times in this game were excellent. And I know you're going to get to Pulisic, so I'm going to get it out of the way. He deserved his start, and he was brilliant. And he should have had another goal. He never quite got the best contact on it. It was cleared off the line. But he was excellent. And it's more food for thought for Frank Lampard when all these attacking options are available. Just who's going to start? As I said last week, if you're going to start in that front line for Chelsea, you're going to have to be on your toes and performing well every week.
Frank, as Craig mentions, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about Christian Pulisic after his performance. Scores a goal, nearly scores another. Does he deserve to be starting for Chelsea?
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, every time I saw him playing, I mean, he did what he had to do. I'm pretty sure he can even progress and still progress and do every time a better give a better performance. But what he did today is very clever. He ran a lot like all his teammates. I think if Craig mentioned that offensively they did great, I think also defensively the work of Mount that we saw less than Pulisic, but also Pulisic on his side, Williams at some point, even Giroud the first half, they came back and they worked all together to make sure that Manchester City, we had a lot of thoughts before trying to find some spaces behind the defense or give another pass to maybe shoot. It was very complicated for Manchester City to get around that Chelsea team. But Pulisic, I mean, he was so clever when he did. He was breaking at some point, then when Mendy tried to get the ball, pushing the ball forward, and so fast, and what a last pass, what a last shot. You know, the curve to avoid Ederson is absolutely fantastic. I mean, that's a beauty. That's a beauty. That's simply a beauty that we saw today from Pulisic. And he was fantastic, but he's not the only one, because I think that the performance of Chelsea was pretty good today.
Just briefly, Sebi, Frank Lampard, and I made this point before, look, he's going to be under more pressure next year because they're spending money. But he knows that. He's not stupid. But he's not frightened to put people in the team. Don't matter who you are. Mason Mount was playing in the Championship on loan at Derby County last year. He's played every league game. He has played every league game, and he's blossomed. And he's got more confidence, and Frank was right to mention him. So if you're playing well at Chelsea, Lampard will put you in, no matter who you are. Conversely, for Manchester City, they got to find a way, and this might sound strange for a team that have won 8 of the last 9 domestic trophies, right? That's huge success. However, the gap to Liverpool this year has been too big. And they've got to find a way when they're dominating teams, and they did for long periods of this Chelsea game, particularly early on, with some super football, but they've got to find personnel that understand when City are attacking what the defensive responsibilities are of the game and making the right decisions. There's no Vincent Kompany around anymore to guide that ship at the back. So they're going to have to find that personnel. Otherwise, they're going to have the same problems next year. That silky football, but making way too many mistakes at the back, and being picked out when they're dominating games, being picked off on the counter attack. That's a huge problem for them, and it's one that he's going to have to find an answer to, Pep Guardiola.
Frank, what do you think the issue is with City? They're certainly not the team they were even a year ago.
Well, clearly what they have to do if they want to catch up Liverpool, and the main difference that we can find the two teams is when what Craig said. The mainly is the defense and how they organize their defense. Fernandinho is not a center back, even if he already played there. But they have to work harder defensively. They have to work all together defensively. It's good to have the possession of the ball. It's good to dominate the game, but it doesn't mean that you're going to win it. And you have to be strong. Chelsea was very patient today. They had 2 chances in the first half, or 3 chances, and they scored a goal. So it means that at some point, Manchester City loses his concentration and the players don't do the job they have to do. Let's just see the goal that Pulisic scored. It's just a little mistake from Mendy and Gundogan, and the players don't adjust to that. Mendy doesn't follow Pulisic. He only tries to get the ball and to make the pressure like Guardiola asks all the time. But it's a big mistake at that point and at that time of the game. And that allows Chelsea to score a goal. So if they want to improve and maybe chase Liverpool next year, they have to improve there. When you see the names of the defenders at Liverpool and what they do on the field, and you see what Manchester City defense does, yeah, they have something to work on in that matter, because otherwise it's going to be the same next season for Manchester City.
Sebi, mistakes can happen, right? But it's no coincidence how many times it's happened for Manchester City this season in particular. Because, as I said, people make mistakes. But the amount they've made is a telling sign. And you look at Liverpool, and they're the team that are setting the example at the moment. There's no two ways about it. And Guardiola has acknowledged that. Is that their fullbacks are no less attacking than Manchester City's. But in some sense, to get themselves back into position quicker, and Liverpool have an organiser as well as been a great defender in Virgil van Dijk, right? And they've both got great goalkeepers, I give you that. But they have an organiser in Virgil van Dijk. And so that is their buffer for when their fullbacks are out of position or don't get in quick enough. As Frank mentioned, Fernandinho is a midfielder and he's had to take a lot of that load this season. I think he's a fantastic player. But he's not, he gets caught out defensively. And I think it'll be interesting to see how Guardiola addresses that, the issues at the back. I think the left-back position is an issue, has been for a while. And the centre-back position is also a major issue for him. He's losing David Silva, but he's already said, look, we don't need to replace David Silva as good as he is because we've got Phil Foden coming through and we have others. But when he goes to his board and they look at the budget, if he's not staring at that back four, then he's going to be at big problems next season again.
Gentlemen, let's talk big picture. When you look at the table, no question about it, Liverpool are the top dogs of the Premier League. After that, though, and as we look ahead towards next season, Manchester City, depending on what happens, Court of Arbitration for Sport, could be in for some serious trouble in the coming years. Chelsea's a young, talented team. They look amazing on Thursday. How close, Frank, do you think Chelsea is to overtaking Manchester City?
Well, depending on the recruitment that we can see Chelsea is creating for next season, I think they can compete with them. They would have to work very hard because the players are still young, still for some inexperience. I think about Gilmore, I think about Mount, I even think about Pulisic who have to improve, and they will, because they are very talented. Tammy Abraham also, if he stays. So you have players who are going to create for sure the future of Chelsea. When they're gonna perform at the top, I don't know. Hopefully next year for the Chelsea fans and the club. It might take another year, but as Craig mentioned, Chelsea has a very competitive game, we have a competitive squad, and we'll be able to put Manchester City in danger, especially if Manchester City doesn't improve their defense system.
Craig, Chelsea seem to be trending up, City seem to be trending down. Do you see them overtaking next season?
Well, I think you're pushing the boat out a bit far there with City. But they've had one average league season by their standards. And that's by their standards. I mentioned they've won 8 out of the last 9 domestic trophies. But they've no doubt got some pieces of the jigsaw that they need to fill. But we've seen by some of their football and the talent that they've got. And don't forget, they had players again unavailable, you know, tonight. Aguero's out for the rest of the domestic season. And there's others that were not available. So we should not write City off. But Chelsea can only worry about putting themselves in a better position since the transfer ban. And I think they've done that. But Frank Lampard will know he's got a fair ways to go, because City will improve next year, because they, you mark my words, they will be trying their damnedest to hunt Liverpool down. But there's no doubt Chelsea have to make sure, Sebi, that they nail this top four. Because fifth place, as you know, may get Champions League football depending on what happens to City, but it may not. And we know United have improved, and we know United's running is particularly easy. So Chelsea have given themselves a little bit of breathing space at the moment, but they've got to make sure they get this job done.
Frank, almost impossible at this point to see Chelsea missing top four. Do you think it could happen?
Yeah, everything can happen in football. I mean, you have to be consistent. That's the main problem for coach during the season, to keep the players at the top, to make sure that they're going to compete until the end. As Craig just mentioned, Manchester United is getting better and better every game they play. They don't lose many games. They always catch up, and they're very much performant right now. So Chelsea will have to see forward if they want to catch Leicester maybe, but they have to see check on the mirror backwards if Wolves or Manchester United will be able to come back. As you said, winning against Manchester City is a fantastic breath for Chelsea, because they're still 5 points ahead of Manchester United, but they will have to work very hard until the end of the season, and they know that. But if they do so, of course they're going to catch the fourth place at least.
Haven't quite seen the rundown yet. We'll see if we can track down Stevie Nicol for tomorrow's show. Plenty more to discuss either way as Liverpool are champions of England for the first time in 30 years.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Sid Lowe joins the show to discuss the sensational swap deal, Sid, reported between Barcelona and Juventus. 23-year-old Brazilian Arthur going to Turin. Milan Pjanic, 30 years old, going to Barcelona, plus 10 million euros. Let's start with Arthur's side of this. Sid, a couple months ago, he made a statement saying his only option was to stay at Barcelona. Now he's accepted the move. What's changed?
I think what's changed really is the amount of pressure that Barcelona have put on him. I think the sense that they feel increasingly, or they have made him see that they feel increasingly like he doesn't have a future at the club, which whether or not that's true in footballing terms, I suppose, is a totally different issue to whether it's true in financial terms. He has perhaps would have seen that, I think, as a sign that they don't fully believe him, see that as a sign that they're not treating him particularly well. I imagine as well that at the same time as there's a, if you like, a kind of a push factor from Barcelona, a push towards the door, there'll be a pull factor from Juventus, which will be that the offer that they put in place for him looks better and better all the time, that maybe there's been some kind of commitment to where he's going to play, how often he's going to play, what sort of role he's going to have. And I think essentially that's what's changed in all of this. This is a deal that Barcelona wanted to get done some time ago, but as we've seen over the last 2 or 3 months, and in fact even longer than that, really and truly Barcelona have been looking for a way to make it get done with any of their players. And it just so happens that Arthur is kind of the weakest link in that.
Sid, I feel like a lot of the reaction I'm seeing online, at least, from Barcelona fans has been mostly negative. And a lot of that negativity has to do with the age of the players. Pjanic, 30, and Arthur, 23. What's been the reaction on the ground in Barcelona?
No, I think it's broadly similar. And I think it's broadly similar because in a way, the age thing, it kind of encapsulates this. And it encapsulates this not so much because one player is much older than the other, because ultimately that really wouldn't matter a huge amount, but that because the difference in age tells you that this is a sale that suggests that Barcelona got their planning all wrong. You know, Arthur wasn't just a guy that they signed that they thought was very good. He was supposed to be a strategic signing. He was supposed to be someone who fitted the Barcelona identity, that was about them getting back in touch with that identity, with that whole essence of the way that they're going to play. He was supposed to be something broadly similar to Xavi. Now, let's not laugh at that just yet, because when it first happened, when he first came through, there was a suggestion that he did some of the things that Xavi did. Even Leo Messi said that he saw little glimpses of Xavi in him, and now he's going. And I think the reaction to it is not just, you know, here's a player that we thought was strategically going to be very important for us, was going to play very well for us for 10 years, and now he's going and we're upset about that. Because the truth is, over the last 18 months, 2 years, not enough has been seen from Arthur for people to look at this and say, we're really disappointed to see him go. I think they're upset and they're disappointed because they look at this and they suspect, and they are quite right, that this shows that the planning was a mess. This shows that Barcelona are doing this move for financial and structural reasons, not for footballing ones. And so I think the negative reaction towards this isn't really because anyone's desperately sorry to see Arthur go, or desperately upset to see Pjanic come, because there's a sense that he may well be a very good player, but that they feel like even if this turns out to be the right move in purely footballing terms, it was done for the wrong reasons. So I think the depth of disappointment and sadness at this deal isn't really about either of the two players. It isn't really about football. It's precisely about the fact that the whole deal doesn't feel like it's about football at all. And that sense that Barcelona at an institutional and organisational level have horribly lost their way.
Barcelona, of course, Sid, chasing now Real Madrid in the table. Well, even in the table, but of course the head-to-head tiebreaker favours Madrid. When you talk about Madrid, they're coming off a 2-0 victory over Mallorca. Controversial, perhaps not as controversial as the game just 3 days prior to the 2-1 victory over Sociedad. Has the outcry over the help that Madrid may be getting from the referees, has it expanded beyond the Catalan press yet?
Yeah, it has. I mean, it has in part just because, you know, whenever it becomes very big in the Catalan press, then it tends to expand anyway, and other other areas of the country pick up on it, those people who aren't Real Madrid fans pick up on it, and of course Real Madrid themselves pick up on it. So what we get, of course, is a series of reaction, and then you get counter-reaction. And so, for example, after the game against Mallorca the other day, Sergio Ramos came out and said, you know, I've had enough of people kind of inventing film plots about this and talking about this. What we do on the pitch is what matters. The referees and the VAR system is there to help out, to make sure there's justice, and it's not the reason why we're top. And so you get this kind of response and then counter-response. Now, it hasn't turned especially nasty, but I suspect we are in a position now where we probably need there to be a couple of games where nothing really happens either way, either in favour of Barcelona or in favour of Madrid or against one or against the other, and then maybe things will settle again. But of course, with the title race being this close, every single decision is going to be looked at even more tightly, even more closely, even more microscopically than before.
Sid, it seems like anywhere football is played, there's a reason given why the referees don't go to the monitor. What's the logic or lack of logic in Spain? Because, again, it seems like the referees are not going to the monitor.
No, that's right. And this is one of the things I think that baffles people in Spain, is that we are told constantly, you know, well, these are the things that the referees can go to the monitor for. These are the things that the VAR can intervene on. And yet we see decisions where quite clearly the VAR is intervening, even if referees aren't going to look at the monitor. Over the last few days, the big decisions that have been talked about have, generally speaking, the referee hasn't gone to the monitor because that is not the nature of the decision. So to give you an example, the Real Sociedad decision, which was a Real Sociedad goal, has caused the shot from Jan Usai that went in, but it was ruled that Mikel Merino was interfering with play. The referee, from his position on the pitch, decided that Mikel Merino was interfering with play. That is not something that VAR overturns. VAR would overturn whether or not he's standing in an offside position, but not whether or not he's interfering with play. Now, of course, what this has done is it's opened up the debate in Spain about whether the protocols through which the VAR is applied or not applied need to be changed. And referees, it's curious because a lot of the time, some of the protocols we're told about, it's very clear that they're not being followed anyway. It's very clear that referees are in constant contact with people watching screens. But of course, in terms of those things that you see, in other words, the referee leaving his position on the pitch, running to the touchline, looking at the screen, that is still following protocols. And basically, put very, very simply, there are parts of the protocol where they do not invite the referee to go and have a look at it.
Sid, Real Madrid have the tiebreaker. As we mentioned, 7 matches left. The run-in would seem to favor Real Madrid if you look at the schedule. I wonder if you agree with that. Do you see Real Madrid slipping up more than Barcelona in what's left of this season?
Yeah, I would agree that the fixture list as it is between now and the end of the season favours Real Madrid. I think Barcelona would have been looking at this little run of games and thinking, had they got through Sevilla winning, had they got through Atletico Bilbao winning, they've got Villarreal coming, they've got Atletico Madrid, of course, coming fairly soon, then they would have gone into the last four games and thought, that's it, we're basically done. But they're already behind Real Madrid, albeit only on head-to-head. I agree that the fixture list is harder for Barcelona. Admittedly, not massively harder, but a bit harder, not least because there's still that game against Atletico Madrid in it. And to be honest, I look at the running that Real Madrid have got, I look at the strength and depth they have, I look at the quality of the players they've got, I look at the fact that we're now playing behind closed doors. So, you know, those, some of those factors that help smaller teams against Real Madrid, you know, the fact they have 7 days for every game instead of just 3, the fact that they've got a fan base in their favour, the fact that there's the pressure that Madrid sometimes feel in front even of their own fans, all of those have been stripped away. And when you strip away some of those kind of external factors that sometimes help to level the playing field and they're not there anymore, then you're left with an inescapable reality, which is that Real Madrid are so much stronger than everyone they're going to face between now and the end of the season. And to be honest with you, I think Real Madrid will win every game between now and the end of the season. So I think it doesn't matter what Barcelona will do. I think while it is still only head-to-head, I think it's very definitely advantage Real Madrid at the moment.
Thank you, Sid. Sid is back for more on Extra Time. He'll be joined by Shaka Hislop, taking your questions. You ever miss an episode, just check it out on the ESPN FC YouTube channel.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Elsewhere in the Premier League on Thursday, Arsenal beat Southampton away by a final score of 2-0. And Ketchen Willock, the goal scorers for the Gunners as they move into 9th place. Craig and Frank back with us. Frank, was this a good performance from Arsenal or just a terrible goalkeeping performance from Alex McCarthy of Southampton?
Yeah, sometimes everything goes bad, and for McCarthy, this afternoon was an awful day. And but to be fair, I think Arsenal did the job. I found a team who tried to work together, and I pretty much liked the Arteta's tactic today, especially the first half when he was playing a kind of 3-4-3, and defensively and offensively, even five at front, which was a 3-2-5 with Bellerin and Saka going on the side. So that was very interesting. And after, I would say that Arteta got afraid maybe and put a little bit the players back, like Bellerin on the right side. And it was a little bit more difficult and more confusing. But they did the job. They deserve to win. Nothing to say. Nothing to blame about. And I think it's good for the Gunners to finally win, and especially have the hope of maybe getting a potential place in European competition next season.
Not just a win, Craig, but a win away from home. Some sign of progress under Arteta.
Well, a win's a win. A win is progress when you've just lost your last two games. So there's a lot of progress needs to happen at this football club. That's crystal clear. The positives you take, obviously, is you get the win. You play a little better. It wasn't scintillating. But your youngsters are getting game time and getting goals. Is Aubameyang's threat in behind is a big threat for Arsenal, and he's such a key component for them. But then losing, you know, Tierney again, who looked as if he went off with an injury, and his Arsenal career has sort of been a little stop-start for that problem. But, you know, at the end of the day, Arteta's trying to figure it all out. Next year for him, whether they get into Europe or not, is going to come down to recruitment. That's not going to change. And until he gets the right players in and the right players that he wants out, then it's going to be difficult for him. But from terms of today's game at Southampton, he just had to get a win. He couldn't afford to go down there, take another defeat, and then try and pick everybody off the floor again. So that's not happened. It gives them something to work on, and they move on. I still think it's going to be a struggle for them to get into Europe this year, but let's see.
Arsenal then their first win, indeed their first points since the restart. A reminder, do not miss tomorrow's show. We'll be back, plenty to discuss Juventus in action and a full look ahead to all of the weekend slate. Liverpool are English champions for the first time since 1990, clinching the Premier League Thursday after Manchester City fell against Chelsea. 23 points clear are Liverpool with 7 matches to go. The excitement all over Andrew Robertson's Twitter feed. Look, he posted this picture, apparently giving Trent Alexander-Arnold the cold shoulder. 4 missed calls for his backline mate. Of course, the reaction all over Twitter. There's Trent Alexander-Arnold. Hey, you're not going to pick up my call. I'll tweet about it. So did James Milner. And finally there, a word from Liverpool's American owner, John Henry. It is said, we are Liverpool. You, the supporters, are Liverpool in every sense, and you continue to drive the club forward, a historic club making history once again. And from the celebration of one championship to news of another, the 2023 Women's World Cup, it was announced on Thursday by FIFA, will take place in Australia and New Zealand. The Pacific nations will jointly co-host the event. They won it in a very tight vote over Colombia. All right, that'll do it for this edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to Craig Burley. Thanks also to Frank LaBeouf. Right now, it's time for Extra Time with Shaka Hislop and Sid Lowe. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this extra special edition of Extra Time. We got Sid Lowe, we got Shaka Hislop, and, of course, as always, we have your questions. You've used the hashtag FCExtraTime on Twitter to get them to us, and there are plenty. Frank McManaman starts us off. If you could choose any 3 players in the world to be on your newly formed squad, who would you choose, taking into account current age and form? Shaka, this sounds like it's right up your alley.
Well, I think the first two kind of go without much thought. And regardless of age, Messi and Ronaldo are the best players on the planet by quite some distance. And then third, right now, I think the best player in the world is Kylian Mbappe. So he gets a nod. So I've gone with youth, and I've also got some experience in there.
Sid, who are you going with?
Well, this question is slightly problematic because he says to be on your team, or it depends. I mean, what does my team need? Does it need a goalkeeper? Does it need some forwards? What kind of players does it need? How long am I buying these players for? Is it to win the league this year? Or is it to keep being brilliant in 10 years' time? Because obviously, if you're just, as Shaq says, if you don't even think about it and say, right, best 3 players in the world, Messi, Mbappe, Sadio Mane.
Ooh.
Uh-huh. Okay, leaving Ronaldo out. I'll leave that for another time. Sid, can you tell us more about Luca Romero, asked Kartik, and for my purposes, can you tell me why he's not going to play for Mexico when everybody calls him the Mexican Messi?
Yeah, this is family reasons. And actually, obviously, there's still a possibility that he ends up playing for Spain. He's got Mexican and Argentinian family. He's been in Spain now for 10 years. He's at Mallorca. Obviously, there's a very strange situation with him because he's only 15, the youngest player to have ever played in the Spanish league. Of course, he can't sign a professional contract yet. So I suspect there will be a bit of a queue to his front door in the next few weeks as he gets closer and closer to that 16th birthday. I don't know a huge amount more about him, except that we saw him last night, that everyone at Mallorca thinks he's exceptionally talented, very, very clever, a very determined player. He's got a great attitude. He's very mature for his age. He's got a fantastic mullet. I mean, he looks like a footballer out of the 80s, which is wonderful. It looks like a footballer out of the 80s, and yet, you know, he wasn't even born in the 80s. I mean, it's terrifying. And everyone's very excited. Where he'll end up, I have no idea. Who he'll end up playing for, I also have no idea.
Shaka, is Courtois back to his best?
I'll be honest, Seb, I'm still a bit stunned at Seb's omission of Cristiano Ronaldo. So you'll have to give me a moment just to catch myself, gather my thoughts lightly. Okay, right. Courtois back to his best. It looks so. I mean,
good?
Just considering how I think unnerved he looked when he first arrived back in Madrid, well, Real Madrid, the Bernabeu, and what we've seen of him. I thought he made a save at 0-0 yesterday at Mallorca, which showed that he is looking back to who we'd always thought he had been. So. I'm going to go with yes, but that is a very short-term yes, because up to, 20 games ago, I'm not sure I would have said that.
Sid, has Ansu Fati done enough to replace Antoine Griezmann in the starting lineup in Barcelona's next game against Celta Vigo? That's coming from very, very funny, but I feel like it's coming from half of Barcelona fans, too.
I don't know. I mean, am I being set up here? I mean, first of all, I've upset all the Cristiano Ronaldo fans. Now let's upset a whole load of Anton Griezmann fans as well, so we can do that. I mean, I guess you could prepackage the question, couldn't you? Has Ansu Fati done enough, or has Griezmann done sufficiently little? You know, and obviously, look, they'll rotate, they'll play both of them between now and the end of the season, but I think one of the things that Barcelona have desperately lacked since its restart, and actually all the way through the season, is someone with the nerve and the daringness and the pace and the willingness to run at people. And Ansu has that, and even when Ansu doesn't play well, you feel like there's a little spark of life, there's something that could be about to happen, which we haven't really had from Griezmann. And I say this, by the way, as an enormous fan of Antoine Griezmann, as someone who thinks that we've massively underrated how brilliant he's been in the last 5 or 6 years in Spain, but it just isn't working in that structure at Barcelona right now. So that's the long version of the answer. The short version of the answer is yes.
Shaka, should Sergio Ramos Shaka's be considered for Ballon d'Or?
I haven't joined this yet because you've already upset 3.5 billion people with the Ronaldo omission. You just holding on to the 3.5. As long as you don't get a messy question, I think you'll be all right. But yeah, you're going well.
I'm waiting for a messy question. I want a messy question now. just to even this up, I want a messy question. Ask me a messy question, and my answer is going to be, Messi's rubbish, get rid of him, he's finished, it's the end.
You're going to have to move to Mars, then. Right.
I love how Shaka thinks there are 3.5 billion people watching this show. Brilliant.
I reckon the day that I arrive on Mars, right, my spaceship goes and lands on the surface of Mars, right, I wind down the window, or whatever you do when you get off a spaceship, you know, I look out the window, I go down the little ramp, I set foot on Mars, go, wow, the red planet. And a little Martian comes running along and says, Messi or Ronaldo?
I don't know what's the weirdest part of that, the little Martian, or the fact that you think you have to wind down your window when you finally land on Mars.
Hello?
Here comes the NASA expert. Here comes the scientist. All right.
I'm just saying, Sam. You know what? You're not winding down
I should have realised, of all the footballers in all of the world, to challenge, or not to challenge, but to even bring up rocket science related questions. It was. I had to be on with Shaq, didn't I? If I said this to Stevie Nicol, I'd have got away with it. I had to be on with Shaq the day I started talking nonsense about interplanetary travel.
Wait, how did we get some.
Speaking of Stevie Nicol.
Yeah?
Let me get us back on track, and we'll use Stevie Nicol to do that, because our next question would be perfect for him. Should Sergio Ramos be contender for Ballon d'Or? Shaka?
Well, I'm going to call him the best Stevie Nicol here. That's ridiculous. For what? He scored one free kick yesterday. Everything, well, I mean, some people would think that he shouldn't have been on the pitch, but it's foul just before it. Sergio Ramos is brilliant, but let's not get carried away.
Would you like me to upset the Sergio Ramos fans now as well?
But he's kept Stevie happy, and that's very important.
That's all that matters.
Sid, can Atalanta beat Barcelona over one leg like it'll be this August in the Champions League?
Of course they can. Absolutely they can. And that's not because Atalanta are brilliant or because Barcelona are bad, although both those two things at the moment are broadly speaking true, obviously within the context of expectations for the two clubs. But also because once we get into this kind of mini tournament in Lisbon, although Lisbon's had a terrible outbreak of the virus over the last couple of days, so even that, I suppose, is in danger now. But once we get into this mini tournament, I think anything can happen. I think it's going to be a very strange, very unusual Champions League. And absolutely, I think Atalanta are good enough to beat Barcelona. And absolutely, I think it can happen, yeah.
Hi, Tackle, bring us home. Is there any save that you pulled off by a complete fluke?
Yes. The one I remember most, and it was an important one because it was Newcastle Sunderland at St. James's Park. And they, Sunderland had an attack, and I can't remember what happened. The ball popped out to the top of the box, and somebody hit it. And I mean, I've made quite a few fluky saves. But this one, I didn't see when the ball popped out to the edge of the box. I didn't see when the player hit it. I did not see the ball. I just got a thump right in the middle of my face. I mean, I'm right on my goal line or thereabouts, and I don't see anything. I just get smashed in the face, and the ball stays out and it gets cleared. And I see the replay after the game, but that of all the lucky saves I've made was easily the most, because at least the others I saw the ball or knew it was hitting me or something. This one I didn't know what happened until match of the day later that night.
Perfect way to wrap up Extra Time. Thanks to Sid. Thanks to Shaka. We will be back on tomorrow's edition of ESPN FC. Juventus in action in Serie A as they look to cling to the top of the table.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your teenager to help around the house?
Okay, Mom, I emptied the dishwasher, vacuumed the basement, and folded the sheets out of the dryer.
Wait, what?
Oh, and next, I'm going to clean Mitten's litter box.
Are we in some kind of prank show or something? That's a camera, isn't it?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.